All right. We are in Deuteronomy 5. Where Moses is kind of re-examining and re-emphasizing the Ten Commandments. We had got down to talking about observing the Sabbath day in verse 12 of Deuteronomy 5, where it says, "Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. In it you shall do no work. You, nor your son, nor your daughter, nor your male servant, nor your female servant, nor your ox, nor your donkey, nor any of your cattle, nor your strangers within your gates, that your male servant and your female servant may rest as well as you. And remember that you were a slave in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there by a mighty hand and by an outstretched arm. Therefore the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day." And we had mentioned last week about how this honored humanity, because often servants, slaves, and even women were not treated with the dignity that men were. And this shows that all of them deserved equal rest. And so this was kind of an unheard of principle at that time, many years ago. Also, about the work that was not to be done or that could be done, some of the ancient rabbis of the Jewish religion had taken that and kind of made their own traditions from it. Some of those traditions were the ones that Jesus denounced in some of his work. Here's a few of them. The ancient rabbis taught that on the Sabbath a man could not carry something in his right hand or in his left hand, across his chest or on his shoulder, but he could carry something with the back of his hand, his foot, his elbow, or in his ear, his hair, or in the hem of his shirt, or in his shoe or sandal. Now, that's the kind of thing I was talking about last week, about how they had kind of made arbitrary distinctions. Well, what's the difference between carrying something like this and like that? So they had just kind of made up their own rules, kind of hemming in, so to speak, what God had actually said. And those were the type of traditions that Jesus condemned, that the Pharisees kept. And those, of course, were just a few of them. So there were legitimate things, as we talked about, that they could do on the Sabbath. And we talked about how they could take care of their animals on the Sabbath. That was allowed. Circumcision was allowed on the Sabbath, and a number of other things was allowed on the Sabbath. I think we mentioned briefly that our week, the 7 day week, doesn't have any physical analogy. We have the day, which is about the earth rotating, and we have months and we have years that all have to do with planets and so forth. But the week, there is no physical analogy. And the week here comes, of course, from the creation week, just like it says in verses 13 and 14, about 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is the Sabbath of the Lord your God. The Sabbath day, the seventh day of the week, just like God ceased from activity on the seventh day. In other words, he created for 6 days, and then the seventh day was when he ceased from creating. Well, that was the pattern then, from then on, for what a week was. And that's why we today have a week of 7 days. Of course, we don't have, we're not under the, I don't know what you want to call it, the legal obligation to observe the Sabbath. That was a part of the old law, the law of Moses. And so today we are under a new covenant, a different covenant. And where were those? There were some things I wanted to read, if I can find them. All right. I can't find them. I had them somewhere. I was just reading them. Nope. Did someone come up here while I was gone and rearrange these? That wasn't very nice. Stop it, whoever did that. That's just wrong. Interesting. It goes from the first to the fifth, then back to the fourth. 2, 3, 4, 5 is missing. There's 5. Aha, there it is. Okay, let's look at Colossians chapter 2. That was the one I wanted to look at. Someone read verses 16 and 17 of Colossians 2.
Let no man therefore judge you in meat or in drink or in respect of a holiday or the new moon or of the Sabbath day, which are a shadow of things to come, but the body is of Christ.
Okay. Not under that obligation of observing Sabbaths anymore. And of course, under the old law, the law of Moses, they were. That was an obligation. Well, we don't observe that the Sabbath anymore. That was taken out of the way at the cross. I should have stayed back there. Look at Galatians chapter 4, another place that mentions the same thing. Galatians 4, let's see. If someone would read verses 9 and 10, Galatians chapter 4, verses 9 and 10.
But now after you have known God, or rather are known by God, how is it that you turn again to the weak and beggarly elements to which you desire again to be in bondage? You observe days and months and seasons and years.
And of course, that's what they did under the law of Moses. It's talking about the weak and beggarly elements of the law of Moses. Why would you go back and want to observe those things? He says you're not under that law anymore, so you're not observing those types. Like you don't have to observe the Jubilee. You don't observe the Sabbath years. You don't observe the Sabbath days. So we are not under those Sabbath obligations today. And it's important that we understand that, because, of course, some teach that we're still under the Sabbath, that we're to continue to follow those. Okay. Anything else about the Sabbath day and its commandment? Anything else about that?
Bobby?
Yes.
I was reading here a while back on the Pharisees and the observance of the Sabbath, and I noticed that some of the more affluent and rich Pharisees were so hypocritical that they would have Gentile slaves do things for them on Saturday so that they wouldn't even have to get out of bed.
Yeah.
And I thought that was pretty telling.
Mm-hmm.
That they had that kind of a mindset.
Yeah.
That they would be that rigid about such a thing. But yeah. It was okay for them to have other people
do things for them. Yeah, that's a good point.
That's pretty much the epitome of hypocrisy.
Yeah, it is. Yes.
And is this something, I can't remember it offhand, where God is communicating with the Jews and saying, this is a covenant between you and me alone.
Yes.
That it was specified just between them.
Yeah.
So no one else has ever been.
Yeah, that's true. It wasn't for anybody else. Yes.
I worked at a very source. I worked with a fellow that was a Seventh Day Adventist.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, I became a special project. He wanted to convert me.
Okay.
And I finally told him, I said, partner, I said, you can be a Christian or you can be a Jew. There's nothing wrong being a Jew. But I said, you can't be both. You got to choose.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's why what he kind of tried to do, right? Tried to be both at the same time.
He was nuts anyway, because you remember that deal in
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was the greatest tragedy in the world. And the Ruby Ridge thing,
mm-hmm. That
was equal to the apocalypse, to where all the Jews were slaughtered.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, he was nuts.
Wow.
So.
Yeah, that is true. I went to school with someone that was Seventh-day Adventist, and they would continue to go back to the commandment. And even though you would show them that the law of Moses was no longer, what we lived under, that was an old covenant, it was nailed to the cross, it never affected them. I mean, they just continued to believe it regardless, so... All right, let's go on then. The fifth commandment. Would someone read verse 16 now of Deuteronomy 5?
I'm your father and your mother, as the Lord your God has commanded you, so you may live long and that it may go well with you in the land of the Lord your God is giving you.
There's some things inherent in this one verse that I think are worth mentioning. One is that this shows that these commandments were for their good. He says, do this so that your days may be long and that it may be well with you in the land. So these, by honoring your father and mother, that was going to make the society a better place to live. And that's, of course, just as true today as far as that goes. Our society functions better when father and mother is honored. And, of course, God knew that many, many years ago, that their lives would be better if the fathers and mothers were honored. And so, that has not changed. That's not changed at all, because the home is a training ground. The children learn to respect their parents long before they learn to respect God. So, when we look at society in general and the lack of respect for God, we probably have a decent idea where at least some of it came from. I certainly wouldn't blame it all on that, but some of it. So certainly home is a training ground to a degree. And God wants them to understand that if society is going to be stable and going to function, that the family unit has to be what God wants it to be. And when it starts not being what God wants it to be, then it's going to go downhill. Yes.
Ephesians 6, 1 through 4.
Mm-hmm.
Fathers, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord.
Yeah. And that goes right along with this commandment. Some of the same wording. Did you notice that? Some of the exact same wording is used there in Ephesians 6 that's used back here in this fifth commandment. That's a timeless principle. All right? I mean, from Genesis all the way through Revelation, the principle is that the family unit is the foundation of society. I mean, it's what makes society stable. It's what makes the society function at the right level. Yes, Skip?
Well, this one's a radical concept also.
Oh, sure, compared to the other cultures, yeah.
Other cultures, yeah, because once a man or a woman got to where they couldn't work anymore, it was bye, see you later,
Right.
Go ahead, hit the desert, hope you make it. And, this was a new concept.
Yep, that's a good point. And a lot of these, these commandments were given or reemphasized right before they go into the promised land where they would see all these other cultures. Yes.
We use the example of the prodigal son. Apparently the father was still in control of grown men, because that youngest son was able to go to a far country on his own.
Yeah.
He had to be old enough to survive.
Yeah, right. He wasn't 12, right.
The patriarch was until they died was actually the family head, and they submitted to it unless they were just a rebellious son or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
And today, about the time you get about 12 years old, that's
that's true. That is true. It's interesting that the Pharisees, in one of their encounters with Jesus, Jesus basically got onto them because they had taken this commandment and kind of turned it upside down. Let's go to Matthew 15. Would someone read verses 3 through 6? Matthew 15, verses 3 through 6.
But he answered and said unto them, why do you also transgress the commandment of God by your tradition? For God commanded, saying, honor thy father and mother, and he that curseth father or mother, let him die to death. But he said, whosoever shall say to his father or his mother, it is a gift by whosoever thou mightest be blessed by me, and honor not his father or his mother, shall decree. Thus have ye made the commandment of God none effect by your tradition.
See, they had taken the commandment and made a tradition out of it that basically contradicted the commandment. And Jesus is condemning them because they're ignoring the commandment but following the tradition. They came up with this rule that said, well, they basically didn't have to honor their father and mother under this circumstance. And Jesus then in verse 7, the first word, hypocrites, because they had done just that. They had completely turned the commandment upside down by their tradition because they had made up some circumstance that they thought nullified their obligation to their parents. So, again, the family unit here is so important. It's so important to society. It's so important to the stability, the health of any society. I mean, anywhere in our world today, the family unit is very important. All right. The sixth commandment, verse 17, you shall not murder. Here we see the sanctity of human life that is emphasized. And of course it's emphasized, you know, throughout the Bible. But here's another place where the dignity, the sanctity of human life is emphasized. Because God knows the importance of human life. Some might wonder, well, how can God support capital punishment, which he did in throughout, but at the same time prohibit murder? Well, there's a difference between the society, the government, executing capital punishment as opposed to me just taking vengeance on somebody. And there's a huge difference between those two things. You know, I'm sorry, yes.
I'm assuming the King James Version is when the word kill was substituted.
Oh, probably, yeah.
And being the English language, almost all English-speaking people, that's what they all read it to say, it's a kill.
Yeah.
But when he's in the same area here where he's going to be telling these people, he's going to have to go purge the land and actually kill all these people living in the promised land.
That's exactly right.
There's a huge difference there.
Yeah, absolutely. The big, big difference between those two concepts, kill and murder. And that's a good example of one right there. That's a good example. So again, I don't have the right to just go murder somebody. I'm not given that right as an individual.
And that's why they had to finish the sanctuary where someone, if they accidentally kill someone,
that's right,
they could go there without the fear of being killed in retribution until they can figure out what exactly happened.
That's right. They basically ended up kind of having a court trial to figure out, you know, was it done accidentally? Was it done intentionally? And that's true. And of course, Jesus says that on the Sermon on the Mount, takes this to a new level when he talks about murder can be in the heart. You know, if you hate someone to that extent, it's just like murdering them. That's in Matthew 5, of course. So we have to be concerned not just about the outward physical act, but about the attitude and the heart that goes with it. So again, God knew how important the sanctity of human life was. It was going to be critical to society functioning. A society that does not value human life is not going to be around long and is not going to be a very good society. But one that does value human life will be the kind of society God wants. So these are all principles. I mean, all 10 of these are principles that help societies, every society. If they would, regardless of where they are or what kind of people, if they will follow these principles like God knew, then it would be a better society. As is the very next one that he mentions. You shall not commit adultery. Same thing. A society that has no moral boundaries is going to be a society that will soon fall. A society has to have moral boundaries. There can't just be any excuse for extramarital sex. There just can't be these all excuses that people say, well, you know, my spouse doesn't understand me, so that gives me a right to go live with someone else. Or, well, we're in love and I don't love my spouse anymore, so I can leave them and go live with someone else. God knew that that type of thinking would ruin a society. So he says, you shall not commit adultery. And the New Testament, of course, reemphasizes that the same way. Let's look at Matthew chapter 5 again. And then we'll look at Galatians 5. Verse 27 says of Matthew 5, you've heard that it was said to those of old, you shall not commit adultery, but I say to you that whoever looks at a woman to lust for her has already committed adultery with her in his heart. So it says, if your right eye causes you to sin, pluck it out and cast it from you, for it's more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body be cast into hell. And if your right hand causes you to sin, cut it off and cast it from you, for it's more profitable for you that one of your members perish than for your whole body to be cast into hell. Here Jesus is emphasizing again that it's not just the act, it's also the attitude and the spirit that can cause one to sin. Of course, adultery is one of the works of the flesh in Galatians chapter 5. Adultery and fornication, uncleanness, and so forth. So we can be guilty whether the outward act is actually done or not. That's what he's saying in Matthew chapter 5. And again, it goes back to a society that has no restraints will soon fall, will soon deteriorate, and no longer be in existence.
Bobby?
Yes?
Just think in your lifetime, even the stand in the church, though, on the divorce thing.
Oh, yeah.
And we have states now, they've read for a while, they're going to make people go through a waiting period before they got a divorce. Now, I don't even know if they have to even appear in court now. They can just file a thing, and next thing you know, it's dissolved, and
yeah,
they're on their way.
Yeah, it's very, very simple. It's
and,
true.
And, so, and what God told them, you know, if someone puts his wife away, someone else buries it, they've committed adultery. So, you know.
Yeah. Oh, it's changed immensely in my lifetime. I mean, it's like a whole new world, really. It really is. It's like a whole new world just in my lifetime, how it's changed. And just people, you know, it's nothing at all on, you know, TV and media and entertainment. I mean, it just, marriage just has very little significance. I mean, it's not even taken serious, really, by many, many people. God takes it serious. Now, his view of it hasn't changed, but our society, well, in other societies too, not just America, but other societies, the same way, they just look at marriage as something that can be gotten into and gotten out of just like that. I mean, just doesn't.
Planners, you know, big
Oh, yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. Definitely is for them.
In the Catholic Church, I mean, it used to be pretty hard if someone's going to marry someone
and get divorced.
And yep. they've eased up on theirs considerably, too. I mean, they don't have to. We have an uncle that married a lady that's a Catholic. He had been married before, which his former wife's dead now. But she had to go through all kinds of steps, get all kinds of information just to. For them even consider to let her marry
them. Yeah. So it is it's a serious thing. It's a serious thing. As is the eighth commandment. You shall not steal. Okay? You shall not steal. This is another a foundation principle for society. You know, a society where people don't value other people's possessions, it's going to be a society that will fall. So God knew how important it was for Israel to respect each other's property, each other's possession. So, you know, this emphasizes people's right to personal property for individuals to have. And so we have to honor other people's possessions. And, of course, this would go to, you know, not being envious or jealous of what other people have as well. We're going to talk this morning a little bit about stealing from God, so I won't talk about that, but we can steal from God as well. The answer is in Ephesians chapter 4, and that'll be the last thing we have time to look at this morning. Ephesians chapter 4, and we'll notice verse 28 about stealing. Ephesians 4, 28. Ephesians 4, 28 says, "Let him who stole steal no longer, but rather let him labor, working with his hands what is good, that he may have something to give him who has need." There's the answer. Instead of stealing, people need to work. Instead of stealing to get something, you need to work to get that. And that's the basic, simple answer, is labor, is to work instead. All right, well, our time is up this morning. I appreciate all your comments. And the ninth commandment, Lord willing, will be next Sunday morning.